Welcome to One Planet, One Place Radio Show. The show for the human spirit. Brought to you in conjunction with the Evolutionary Business Council. Now, please welcome your host, author, international speaker, and growth coach, Simon Jordan.
Hi, this is Simon Jordan. Welcome back to another episode of One Planet, One Place, the radio show. Well, today is a fantastic guy I've got on the phone. And we're dialing via Skype, and we've just had a long conversation of why Skype can be fantastic 1 minute and just useless the next. So if you do hear lots of pops and hisses, I do apologise. Microsoft, you've paid all that money, get it sorted. Anyway, so let me give you the introduction. Daniel Priestley, you may have heard of him, is a successful entrepreneur, best-selling author and international speaker. He started his first company in Australia aged 21. Within a year, he had seven-figure revenues and expanded nationally. In 2006, at age 25, he opened a UK office and achieved over 2 million in sales in the first 12 months in London. Daniel published his first book, Key Person of Influence, in 2010, and it hit the number one spot for business books in the UK within 3 weeks. The book covers five special skills required to lead a fast growth enterprise. Daniel has bought and sold businesses, raised money for his ventures, and been on the board of several businesses and charities. Daniel heads up an entrepreneur growth accelerator with offices in Melbourne, Singapore and London. The program selects promising small businesses and takes them through a 7-month process to maximise growth. Daniel has spoken all over the world about trends relating to entrepreneurship. His passion revolves around small business. His next book, Entrepreneur Revolution, is to be published worldwide by Wiley and explains why we're in revolutionary times and how to make the most of them. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's all right, mate. It's
you got all right. That all in one breath.
I know. I felt like I've done another run today. But look, this show is all about the one planet, one place. It's about giving back as well. And it's, well, I say, you know, it's the show for the human spirit. It's about inspiring people, inspiring stories. I mean, you know, starting a business at the age of 21, who gave you that mindset? What made you get off your backside to do that?
Well, for me, entrepreneurship started very young. I was very fascinated by entrepreneurship from about 14 years old. After working at McDonald's and getting to know the owner of my franchise, I had many conversations with my parents about entrepreneurship and started talking to a friend's father who was a very successful entrepreneur. And it just lit a spark within me. Something from that teenage years made me love this idea that I could live outside of the traditional system. I could be free. My income would be whatever I was rewarded for my efforts. And I was really fascinated by this idea that, you know, not everyone has a job or not everyone, you know, works in government, and that some people actually go out there and the sky's the limit for them. So it was around that time I started reading books like The E-Myth, I started reading books like The Richest Man in Babylon, I started reading books, I started listening to Tony Robbins' kind of tapes, and even it was a little bit later, but I read Richard Branson's autobiography in 1998, which completely, you know, lit a fire underneath me as well. So it was all of those things that were starting to happen in my teenage years that sort of steered me in that direction. Yeah.
What were your parents doing then? What were their jobs?
When I grew up, Mum was a journalist, and she later became a local government politician. She was elected into local council, and my father was a school teacher growing up. He took his long service leave and started a small newspaper in Brisbane, and then he later became a business consultant and coach, specialising in marketing. There's a bit of a common thread there. Mum's a writer, and today I'm a writer, and Dad's business coaching and consulting, and we have the growth accelerator. So
do you think they were, the key people of influence for your life in order for you to have that mindset to grow and do what you're doing now?
I tell you what, having parents who are supportive, I remember having lots of mentors around me. But the one thing I always remember is having parents who were very okay with me to go out and explore. So, if I came home with some harebrained idea, never, luckily, never did my parents ever shoot it down. they were always the type of parents to say, well, you know, go do some research, check it out, make some phone calls, you know, find out someone who could help you make a better decision. And they'd steer me in the direction of exploring and being curious about it. So, you know, I was incredibly fortunate that I did have, you know, parents who, you know, who encouraged me to play, to explore.
Because it's interesting, you know, you find, you know, there are people who haven't had amazing upbringings, who haven't had the opportunities, or they haven't had the support from the parents, and yet they've thought, I've got nothing to lose, I'm absolutely going to go for it. You know, I don't know if you know Char Wasmond?
Yeah, I know Char.
Yeah, great friend. She's been on my other show a number of times, and listening to her story, where she's literally in a one bed, well, it was like a studio apartment, it was like a bed sit with her mother. And her mother's saying, right, have a look around this place. You never want to come back to somewhere like this. You want to be bigger. So she had that spark to go, right, and she took that and really flew with it.
Mm.
So was there one defining moment, you know, it's that you thought, this is awful. You, maybe you saw something or whatever. Just something that people can relate to. Thinking, yeah, I can see that. Is there a defining moment?
For me, there were many defining moments. There was... you know, there was the experience of running. For me, it was not so much driven by, you know, feeling constricted so much. I mean, we didn't grow up in a wealthy family at all. I mean, most of my years growing up, as I said, Dad's a school teacher, Mum's a journalist, on, you know, on fairly normal incomes. But you know, we certainly weren't struggling and doing it poor. But I do remember things like having the opportunity to run a garage sale at age 10 when my mum burnt the kitchen down and selling all the stuff in the house, and feeling an incredible sense of empowerment that I was taking something that was going to be thrown away and I was actually you know, doing something with it. I also remember raising money for charity in two ways. I remember doing jobs for people around the neighbourhood in order to raise money for charity. And I also remember running a school disco in order to raise money for the school. And both of those ideas were, or both of those opportunities were incredibly powerful. I remember feeling very empowered that by having fun and creating a venture, we were able to raise a lot of money for a good cause that I believed in. And today that's actually still part of, you know, something I'm closely aligned to. But, you know, there was definitely some defining moments in there. Later when I went to university, I was very much all on my own. I was determined to go out on my own, and at 18 years old, I left home, and I went and lived in a friend's garage, and I was living in a, I was working four jobs initially, and trying to do university as well, and literally living on a concrete floor garage with a mattress on, and all that kind of uni living, and I remember definitely having some defining moments there where. You know, where I got a parking ticket, and that meant that I had to eat breakfast cereal every day for, you know, for a week or so in order to pay my parking ticket, you know, and things like that, and saying, well, you know, I really better get committed to this whole entrepreneurship thing because I don't want to live like this. You know, so a few of those kind of moments.
It's funny, yeah, because I was listening to, you know, sleeping on a mattress on a concrete floor. There's a guy who I interviewed from the previous show, Simon Jordan Radio Show, a guy called Randy Gage in the States, and he was, you know, living on a friend's floor. He'd been to really bad times. He'd been shot, and he'd been on drugs and things like that. And he was living on his friend's floor, eating macaroni cheese pretty much all the time. So a little different from your cereal. And he thought, I can't do this anymore. I need to get off my backside and really make this. And he said he started to really study personal development now. You know, he's a multimillionaire, best-selling author, and all the rest of him, speaker. So you've written this best-selling book, The Key Person of Influence. What do you mean by that? What does the key person of influence mean then?
Well, one thing I realized was I started to realize that in every industry there was a very, very small group of people who their names came up in conversations regularly. They seemed to be the ones who people would phone up with an opportunity. You know, they were the types of people who were earning exponentially more money than everyone else, and they were the ones who get invited to speak at conferences and speak on radio and all of those sorts of things. And I started looking at this idea that, you know, I'd been through this whole couple of years where I'd heard about internet marketing and I'd heard about different marketing strategies, and I'd heard about systems that, you know, build online passive income, wealth generation, machine robots, and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, when I was looking around at different industries, because I had the opportunity to look at different industries, well, I didn't really see that that was actually happening. What I saw was happening is that there's a few key people of influence in every industry. They attract all the opportunity, they attract the brand, they attract all the money, and everyone else is trying to be like them. So I said, well, actually, if I really drill down and see what are the things that they do in common, what are the similarities between these key people, then I'd rather shine a light on why these people have become so influential. And regardless of whether they've got the systems or not, they still attract the opportunities. So I went in and explored that, and I had the opportunity because of the business I was running at the time. I was spending a lot of time with speakers, authors, and top entrepreneurs who command, 10 to 20,000 pounds per day as a speaking fee because of what they've achieved in the past. So I got a lot of time traveling on trains and airplanes with these people to pick their brains and figure out what it is that they do differently.
Okay. So, I mean, was there similarities across those kind of people then? I mean, you've put it all together in a book, but is there something that I mean, I think everything, all entrepreneurs, it's definitely a mindset. Mm. You know, and I was talking to a friend of mine in the States, she's in Calgary, Teresa de Grobrand, and we were talking about partners or whatever, and we were saying, you know, I mean, I'm divorced and she's been divorced as well, and we're saying that as an entrepreneur mindset, it's about you give everything, you give it your all, you put everything into it, you risk everything, and maybe the partners who don't have that, they can't understand it, they really can't. It's just they like the stability, they like the job, which I always think is just over broke, and they can't understand that. So I see that as a commonality. I mean, it seems that this entrepreneur thing has been banded around, and it does get me when I laugh when I watch, which I don't really watch anymore, but, you know, the Alan Sugar, the Apprentice, and you get these people on there saying, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm successful. Well, if you're an entrepreneur, why are you going for a job?
Yeah.
You know, you just think, what kind of crap is that? Yeah. And it's just, you just want to be on TV, go and do X Factor or something.
Especially, why are you going for a job for a guy who hasn't hit a home run in a long time?
So go back. So I was saying that's the... it is to have that entrepreneur mindset, to have that belief and that, you know, just that focus. Mm. And you hear all these other people, you know, say, entrepreneur. But yeah, you're still, but really, would you give it your all? You know, so my question to you is, the people that you interviewed, is there a commonality amongst them?
Yeah, definitely. And it also was interesting. I wasn't just interviewing these people. I was actually living with them on the road for some of the times. You know, I spent a good 2 weeks traveling with a guy who built 3 multi-billion pound businesses. And, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, doing events, having conversations all the way. So I really get to know these people really quite well. So the first quality I noticed was a tendency towards vitality versus functionality. So functionality is about a focus on performing a set of functions and a set of processes and basically saying I ticked all the boxes and I did all the, you know, I did all the things right. I ticked off my checklist and I performed my functions. Vitality is actually defined in the dictionary as a couple of things, which is the first one is it's defined as being the source of life. So it's being a life force. And the second one is that it's defined as being irreplaceable. So all of these people focus not on trying to replace themselves and try to get out of their business. They actually try to get in deeper. They want to become more irreplaceable, and they want to take on more onto their shoulders, and they see themselves as the life force of something. So they see themselves as the life force of the business while they're in it, they push themselves into a position where they become more and more irreplaceable. So everyone sees and, you know, and make sure that people see that they are quite a valuable life, you know, beating heart of the business. So it was that real energy towards vitality versus functionality.
Right, but there's, you know, so many people now say, you know, one of the sort of sales things is, you know, do you want to be working on your business instead of in your business? You know, how to, and like the 4-hour work week.
Well, on your business would be the vitality stuff. In your business would probably be functionality. So if you're sitting there in your business doing repetitive tasks that are just functions, that's actually a great example of a business owner that leans towards functionality.
Yeah.
Vitality is rising above the business and growing it and being, as I say, the life force, the growth factor. But I think it's a very misunderstood situation or a misunderstood comment. So most people think working on your business, not in your business, means that you take this behind-the-curtain role that no one knows who you are and no one thinks that you're special or you just become a replaceable part in the machine. And I think that's actually a very misunderstood conception. I think, in actual fact, it's about rising to the highest level of vitality that you can, becoming most irreplaceable. I mean, if you look at Richard Branson, you know, Richard Branson doesn't check people in at the airline every day and he doesn't issue people credit cards because all of that's just the functional stuff that runs the business. But he's certainly not hiding behind the curtain pretending that he's not part of the business. You know, he's risen to the absolute top and said, hey, I am the heartbeat of this business. I'm the brand. And I'm going to get out there and grow this thing. And energetically, I'm highly engaged in this business, and I'm not someone who's easily replaced.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I love the guy. I think he's absolutely brilliant. He's some people love him or hate him, but I think he's brilliant. He's fantastic. So just briefly, because we're going to sort of round this up. I mean, you've talked about how you started, where you got. What do you see the future for you then? Where are you wanting to head?
Well, my passion is around this concept called the entrepreneur revolution. So my belief is that we're going through radical transformational times, that essentially we're living in a time where it's as significant as the agricultural age turning into the industrial age. So in the industrial age or the industrial revolution, when it switched across from agriculture to industry, it was technology driven. And there was something called technology unemployment, which basically meant that machines replaced human endeavor. So there were people who one person could drive a tractor and replace 100 people in the field. So there's massive technology unemployment like we're seeing today. There was a massive rule change as far as who would become successful. So in the agricultural age, the people who were successful who were good with their hands, but then the machines replaced that, and then it was people who were good with their heads in the industrial age. So I think we're going through a massive transformation, and it's just as significant. It's driven by technology. And in the industrial age, people who are good with strategy and good with their heads did very well. I think we're moving into a time where people who are good with relationships and people who are good with their hearts will do very well in the entrepreneur age. People who work with their passion, people who can unleash passion and mobilize relationships. If we look at the technology that's driving all of this, it's actually technology that's designed to forge relationships and increase your level of passion and the amount that you can share.
Yeah. Twitter. Definitely, yeah, totally agree. It is all about relationships, and they say, you know, I mean, that's why I put the show together, because before the stuff I was doing was all about business. You know, I had all the blog and the TV site and the radio show was essentially about business, but now there was a big shift, and the people I'm connecting with, now the people are coming, that's why I say one planet, one place. It's the show for the human spirit, the human spirit that pushes us forward. We just had the Olympics and the Paralympics. That's the true show of the human spirit. People who have come from nothing, who are overcoming huge adversity and challenges.
Yeah.
And that's why we put the whole thing together. And so people can listen to it and think, wow, yeah. And to really get something, not just, okay, here's the step-by-step guide, how to make, you know, $1 million or whatever, but it's coming from the heart.
Yes.
To real, and it's real stories, real humans. I would say it's not about celebrities and gossip. It's about real stories, real people, and to inspire them, to think them, you know, to make them think differently, to change, to give influence. So I'm hoping, you know, the One Planet, One Place will also be, the key show of influence. That's
fantastic.
The idea behind it. So last question then. Tell me something not many people know about you.
I suppose not many people know that I actually don't have any stuff. All through my 20s, I had lots of stuff. I had two cars at one time and, you know, fantastic sports cars and four-story penthouse and, you know, all sorts of things like that I was into. At the moment, I'm actually really loving having virtually I can pretty much fit most of my possessions into a couple of cases. And I love it that way. So I, when I travel, I use cars that like the shared access cars, and I use Addison Lee when I travel around London. I'm exploring what it's like to not have stuff, physical stuff.
I like that.
So I've gotten rid of most of my stuff, and it actually feels really, really good. And it's funny because it's also, you're in a position of, you know, I'm in a position where I can have as much stuff as I want, but it's very freeing to just turn your back on it all and say, actually, all I'm focused on is just being able to travel light.
You know, that's quite a Buddhist way of living, actually. You say that, yeah, there's a great saying, when I'll get it right or not, but it's about most of our worries and stress are because of our possessions. Because if you buy a car, you're worried about it. Will it get scratched? You've got to fill it up with petrol. Is it clean? All the rest of it. Whereas if you don't have so much stuff, then you don't, you know, you can focus on what's more important. You know, you're taking that. So that's a brilliant way to live. Certainly, I'm interviewing you at the moment. It sounds like you're in a warehouse or you're in a very empty room.
I'm in a beautiful apartment, and I have this most incredible apartment that I love. But once again, it's a fully furnished apartment. I pay for it, obviously, to live here. But none of the stuff is stuff I have to worry about. If something breaks, it's someone else's problem. So, you know, we live in a time where the old economy was all about owning things. I think the new economy is all about having access to the things that you want to have access to when you want to access them. So when I go to, you know, we have a lot of business in Sydney now. When I go to Sydney, I rent a beautiful big house a couple of streets back from the beach. I rent it for 2 weeks at a time while I'm there. I don't have to worry about it when I'm not there. And I get to explore, you know, Sydney Beach without any cares or worries. I've got a place like that in Singapore and Melbourne and here in London. So, you know, I get to travel very much carefree without the worries and concerns of the stuff that I'm no longer viewing as important.
That's brilliant. Don't you want to settle down? I mean, have you got your wife and kids?
Well, no, at the moment I don't, which is why I can get away with it. But I see a lot of people, and I see a lot of people who are very weighed down by their mortgage and their car lease and their credit cards. And servicing their, you know, their stuff and the energetic relationship they have. You know, they spent a fortune on a 50-inch TV screen, so they feel like they have to watch TV every day.
yes, indeed.
You know, all this sort of thing that goes on. And for me, I'm exploring what it is to keep your head clear and to keep you know, very limited energetic relationships to physical things.
That's a brilliant. I like that. It's very interesting. Yeah, because we do have so much stuff. That's what I love eBay. Because if I'm not using it, I haven't used it for a couple of months. Get rid of it. Bin it. You know, clothes as well. It's just build up so much stuff. I mean, there's a stronger word for it. You know what I mean? So it is. It's so much of it.
I completely also understand that some people have a goal to own certain stuff. And luckily I've already been there, and I've had all of those things, and I've kind of realized that's not really what gives me the fulfillment. So I know some people are listening and say, oh, but I want to have the BMWs and the Lamborghinis and all that sort of thing. It's like, cool, well, you know, go for it, have it and enjoy it and enjoy it while you've got it. But for me, yeah, something that very few people know about me, I think most people would think I'm one of those guys who's got the Ferrari and the Lamborghini and all of that sort of stuff. But no, at the moment, literally all my possessions fit into a couple of cases.
That's brilliant. I love that. Well, there was a great line. I think it was Duncan Bannatyne said it. He said the great thing about owning it, the two things about the best things when you own a boat is the day you buy it and the day you sell it. He said, because they're a hassle. brilliant.
He's not using it right, because I've had some of the best days of my life on boats.
You're probably right, yeah. He's a miserable Scotsman.
He's probably not doing the right things with it, because I tell you what, when we take the boat out in Mallorca, it's not at all a miserable day.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, maybe he's not going to the right place. I think he moors his boat up in the Midlands, not Midlands, or the Lake District or something. So that we never get the best weather up there, are you? So anyway, well, Daniel, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for spending time with us on the radio show today.
Pleasure, Simon.
No, it's excellent. Well, look, good luck for the future and everything you're doing. It's fantastic. So just briefly, where can people, and we'll put all these links on the site, but for people who are listening to iTunes or whether if they've downloaded it somewhere else, where can people get hold of you?
Yeah, I run my blog at my one of my central websites, which is keypersonofinfluence.com, which is the site that talks about my book. But there's a blog there, and I blog probably twice a month, just about different issues and different areas around building businesses and building influence. There's a blog at keypersonofinfluence.com.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, we'll put those links on the site. But once again, Daniel Benistar, thank you so much.
Pleasure, Simon. Anytime.
Brilliant. And this has been me, Simon Jordan, from another episode of One Planet, One Place, the radio show. So don't forget, guys, subscribe on here. Go on and leave your comments as well. If you enjoyed the show, if there's stuff that you think, yeah, you've learned, share it with us. You know, if there's stuff that's even about, you know, not living with lots of stuff. I think it's a great part of the show for people to, because we, busy desk, busy head, you know, clear all that stuff. How are you getting clear? How are you clearing your mind or whatever? I'd love to know these comments. So leave it on the show. Again, this is me, Simon Jordan, saying thank you very much to Daniel Priestley. Go and check out his stuff. Really, really great guy. And until next time, take care and speak to you soon. Cheers. Bye.
You've been listening to One Planet, One Place radio show. To make sure you don't miss a single episode, please subscribe on our website or via iTunes. Simply search for One Planet, One Place. And if you've enjoyed this show, then don't forget to share it and click the like button. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.